One, two, three, four!
Everybody, welcome to another episode of That's So Kvetch, where we talk about dating, Torah, and everything in between. It feels so good to be here and talk to you guys. I feel like it's just been such a long time, and I have plenty of explanations for why that is. Life has just been crazy. I actually moved apartments, so I'm in a new place now, still in the same neighborhood, and yeah, it was actually crazy. I was like very stubborn not to spend a lot of money on movers because I was moving only a few blocks away. So I actually had friends help me kind of like carry everything through the heights. And like, it was just crazy. Like Sunday was such a surreal, Okay, so it was two Sundays ago. It was such a surreal day because I woke up knowing I'm going to disassemble my bed, my IKEA bed, and then I'm going to bring it to the new apartment. I'm going to assemble it in the new apartment, and I didn't know how it was going to happen, and somehow, with the help of my friends, thanks Brina and Rena for helping me with that, it happened. And like Sunday night, I was sleeping in my bed, and I just have to say that building your own IKEA furniture or like disassembling is really one of the most empowering experiences. Like I remember when I first moved into my old apartment, when I got the couch, there were like a bunch of pieces and I built it. I remember the next day hosting some people and saying, guys, like you're sitting on the couch that I built. And it's just an unexplainable feeling that I think that everyone should experience, to feel that kind of sense of pride of I made this thing. And so, yeah, I moved in here. I'm so glad to be in a state of stability, at least for the next 2 months or so. And then I'm going to have to actually like look into finding roommates for the other apartments. Definitely going to be re-signing the lease for at least a couple months, and then we'll see what goes from there. And just in terms of the podcast, I wasn't feeling insanely inspired to record, I guess, like during this whole moving process. And I just forgave myself because I think, you know, not everyone is listening to podcasts right now. And I think that I come out with my best content when I am not pushing myself, where like the work that I'm creating is really coming out like organically and I'm just following my creative flow. So I just really didn't record, but I'm excited because I have like all these ideas for July and I feel really settled here, and I'm really excited about like making an Etsy store and maybe posting some more articles on the blog. And I am also excited about just like exploring my new neighborhood kind of. I know that sounds dramatic because I'm still in the same neighborhood, but there really are different stores around me. So a lot of the bodegas I used to shop at are kind of a little more expensive. So I've been shopping at some of the stores on like the higher 180s and the YU side, and they have just been so affordable and so different and awesome. So I've just been really enjoying that and just getting a flavor for the neighborhood, you know? And then, yeah, I also like kind of realized that I wanted to make Aliyah, and I don't know if I've ever really talked about this so much on the podcast, but like, I want to move to Israel. I hope that it works out in the future. And I think that Aliyah is like a good idea for me financially. So I've really been kind of like thinking forward in terms of what that's going to look like, and discovered that like, whatever, all these different things that I discovered about like my status as an Ola that are going to impact my journey. And so it's going to be quite a ride to actually like making the Aliyah flight, etc. But I think that that's kind of like what's right, and that's what God wants. And it's like nice that, you know, it's kind of forced upon me that I have this time. I can't just jump on a plane or go or anything. And I'm treating the future as something that will just work itself out. And I'm really grateful that I'm just been employed during this time. And I think that's enough of a tangent for now, and we're gonna head into the topics of the day. Like, I just learned, just did some digging on arguably one of the craziest stories I've, like, I'm, like, so in shock by this. Like, I think the last story I was in shock by, like, you know, on this podcast was the story of Yehuda and Tamar and just that whole craziness. So I'm really excited to tell the story of Yael and Devorah, the prophetesses. I've mentioned before, but I do this woman's learning group called Ignite with Me'or Manhattan, and we have, like, chavrutas every Monday night, and I have this chavruta, whatever. Anyways, it's great, and I always, like, love getting inspired from those moments, and I actually draw a lot of my inspiration for the podcast from those chavrutas that I have throughout the week. But before I get into that, we're going to be talking about roommate hunting, the season of moving. I have this theory about, like, the seasons of the year, that every month sort of has its own personality. Like, I always hate February. It just, like, it's always, like, a very drab month, and, like, it drags on for so long, even though it's only 28 days, and it just makes more no sense. And I've always loved June, and, like, I love the beginning of summer. It's, like, the start of new beginnings, and, like, I could talk about my theory on all the months, and also I kind of feel like with coronavirus and 2020 being so crazy, wow, they're literally, like, cats fighting outside my apartment. Also, sorry, just on a tangent, great news about this new apartment that I'm in is that it's much, much quieter. So you won't be hearing a lot of the street noises that I always heard back in my old apartment. And I'm just excited to, like, have this silence that I didn't really get to experience. Just, like, recognizing the gift of silence, guys, you know? Anyways, going back to the season of moving, I just feel like summer is, like, this time of unrest for everybody. And, you know, I kind of was, like, moving earlier on, but I really see, like, in all the Facebook groups, like, people are really making changes, making plans, like, leases are going up, people are deciding, are they going to stay in New York, are they going to move somewhere else, and what's next. I really feel like we're kind of coming to, like, the end of a chapter with this summer and starting a new chapter. And there's really always been this, like, sense of transition that I find makes summer very special. There's, like, something really ethereal about, like, being lost and confused about your future, I guess. And just in general, I think, like, we're really settling into this era of the pandemic and, like, realizing that we have no idea how long it's going to be. And of course, like, it's really scary and terrifying. Like, clearly this pandemic is no joke. But I think that as compared to March, we have sort of, in the best way possible, adapted to this new reality that we face. And the things that used to feel so crazy, like Zoom workouts and working out inside, all these different things that we just, like, are doing now, I feel like have just been feeling a lot more normal and comfortable almost. Like, I love that I can just accomplish so much in one day just because, like, I can do it all in my room and I don't have to worry about commuting. Like, I just get to do so many different things, from working out to making my own dinner to seeing friends, versus if I was commuting from work and then I would basically only get to do, like, work and then one activity after, and, like, dinner wouldn't necessarily happen. Like, all these different things that I'm able to do and multitask are really great. And I also, you know, obviously love, I actually really think work from home works for me. I really like working from home. I'm going to stop going on these tangents, guys. Anyways, so for me, I feel like with the pandemic, it's been really hard to motivate myself to date. And I keep telling myself, like, oh, I should get back out there. But also, like, a part of me has really been enjoying the break. And also, like, kind of the ways I used to meet people in person. And, like, I liked that even though I was, like, on apps and meeting people, I, like, always had events and activities where, like, there was the possibility that I could meet someone. So it just felt like life was more full. And now that, like, all of our dating lives are distilled to, you know, apps or whatever it is, I'm like, maybe I should, like, go back and, like, sign up for Sawyer at Sinai. Like, I don't know. I don't think about it until I run into friends or, like, people that are like, yeah, I just started dating someone and, like, it's going great. Or, like, we've been dating for a few months and it's amazing. And I'm just like, I really, like, can do it. Like, I don't know why I'm just like, it's over, you know? So I think that's also definitely been, like, hard for the podcast in general, just like not having that like sense of excitement towards like kind of like the core of what the podcast is really about has also impacted kind of my production of the podcast. If you guys have any tips for like how to get more motivated to date during this time, like hit a girl up, let me know, because I'm just like, all right, like it'll happen when it'll happen, and I'll get back out there when I feel ready, or at least like when I finally motivate myself to do something about it. And then in general, I really love, this is like a separate note, but I really love dating comparisons. And I have a whole bit on how like first interviews for jobs are kind of like dating, and you know, you, whatever, I'm not going to get into it, but I've recently been amused at the similarities between roommate hunting and dating, because I think the conversation that you have when you're finding a roommate is kind of similar to the conversation that you have when you're looking for a partner for the rest of your life. You're like, I am looking for someone who learns Torah and is spiritual, but instead when you're looking for a roommate, you're say like, I'm looking for a girl who's down to like grab a drink and like maybe is also down to like eat a box of cookies with me at night. And it's just the conversation is a little different. So here are my similarities to roommate hunting to dating list. And it's pretty short, so don't get too excited, but I just think it's really funny. And this was partially inspired by a text that a friend of mine received tonight as she was talking to someone. She had just kind of like visited the apartment and really liked it. And, you know, you kind of play that game where like the roommate's like, I'm actually like looking, you know, there are other people on the line, and they let you know, and they're like, well, will you let me know when by? And I just think it's funny how like you really establish your exclusivity right on the bat, and also like your commitment issues. Like you say like, yeah, I'm not like looking to sign a full lease, versus like when you're dating, I don't think you say right away, like, or at least you can say like, I'm looking for something long term. So anyways, the roommate search, hunt, quest, battlefield experience begins with posts about what you're looking for. And so you post on all these Facebook groups, and dare I say it is similar to the Corona Crushes Facebook groups as well, except that you're just writing slightly different things. Arguably it's more important because you are not looking to just go on some frivolous dates with someone, but you're looking for someone that you can live with for at least a year. It's really a huge commitment. And it's also like, if you can't commit, you obviously lose your options. Like, I was really interested in a room, and I told them, you know, I don't know, like, I might be making aliyah, I don't know what's going on with my life, so I can't commit full time. They said, well, like, you're not a serious bet, we're gonna have to go with someone who is like a much more upstanding individual who can commit to this relationship and, you know, make us feel like we're really getting something stable out of this relationship, as opposed to you, who's like kind of all over the place and doesn't really have your crap together. Like, you're not as viable of an option. And I feel like that's kind of similar in dating. I'm like laughing. I have to pause. Okay, let's press on. I had to pause to laugh a little bit. The next one is that you commit to people when it feels right. There's just that vibe that you meet a potential roommate and you think, you know, like, this person's chill, like, they are dressed in a similar way that the way I'm dressed, and they're kind of like acting very chill in a way that like I feel gets along with me. And I think that even though, you know, you're not sitting in a coffee shop or in a restaurant doing this, you're usually like in their apartment, it's like a little more casual the first date, it's still the same thing of like what dating is like you're really just feeling out the vibe of each other. Like, is this gonna work? Like, do we get along? Do we like each other? Like, attraction doesn't really matter in this equation, but like, do I feel good with this person? And then And honestly, guys, I'm really sorry to let you down, because I know it's like hilarious, but that's my list. If you have anything else, let me know. I just think it's like really funny to compare kind of even the conversations. Like, this text my friend received today was like, hey, like, I have someone else looking at the apartment on Thursday, but like, I would really love to lock you in because like, you seem really chill. Like, can you imagine if like you were dating someone and you were like, hey, like, I'm actually seeing this other guy in a few days for another date, but like, you seem really cool, so like, should I cancel on that date because like, I just kind of want to like be with you and commit to you. I think you would really freak the person out, but when it comes to roommate hunting, the name of the game is to just be bold and go out there with your thoughts, be assertive, tell it like it is. There's no games here. It's just, I want to commit to you or I don't, and that's it. Also, I just felt it important to mention that in my apartment hunting, I was kind of just like looking for a mixture of roommate hunting and like a good room, a place that I like know that I would feel comfortable in, and also a place that was cool with me like maybe staying, maybe not staying. And to be honest, that kind of like definitely narrowed my options because people really wanted someone who could commit longer, and at the time I really couldn't because I was like looking into a program in Israel that was going to be at the end of August. I ended up withdrawing, etc., so I couldn't give that decision right away. But now that I'm here, I feel really happy and it feels good, and I plan to stay that way. And just something else that I kind of like, I'm going to swerve the topic now. I always say moving swiftly along. I feel like I haven't like said it in a while, but anyways, moving swiftly along, I wanted to kind of devote a moment to nature because I feel like I've really been trying to get back to nature and like in general, just after, you know, seeing all the Instagram stories and everything that everyone was doing on July 4th, it made me realize like how nice it was to see people adapting to the things that are corona friendly during this time and really spending more time outdoors. And I think despite the fact that the pandemic is terrible, it's really nice to see people just like enjoying the outdoors and the different things that has to offer, be it camping, boating, whatever it is. I just feel like my whole feed was people just like outdoors doing something awesome and something that like they might not have necessarily thought they would have done or would necessarily have spent their July 4th like that, and now are like being given these new opportunities to experience these awesome opportunities. Did I just say opportunities? Whatever. And also just with like Aliyah and like all this stuff, it's just definitely been like stressful to move through, and I've really made it a point to kind of like go back to my roots. I don't know if I've ever talked about this, but like I had like, I feel like everyone who's like into Torah has that moment where they were like had a spark, and mine was really due to reading a book by Rav Nachman. And I've just been like doing my diligence to reconnect to that and like helping me move through this experience. And even just like getting back to Hid Bodedut, which is like being alone in nature and praying, or even just like singing a song, just like the act of being alone in nature. I used to be like religious about it. A few summers ago, I was like every morning I would run out and just like sing a song alone, and like it's something I always come back to. But I've decided recently that it would just be like beneficial to me to like really do it more often. So I'm gonna be trying to do that, especially during the summer when like sunrise is so early. It's like less scary to go out in the morning and just, you know, do some Hid Bodedut, and there's great parks in the Heights. And I also just think it's like interesting how some of my most memorable moments on trips and just in life are like when I'm alone running in the mountains of Israel, or just alone in my room drawing or podcasting. Like these are the moments that I really like feel something very close to my core and my soul. And I just think it's like, I don't know, maybe it's just a personal thing, but maybe it's something of like realizing my oneness with the universe, have what have you may. But I think that when we are living our regular lives, we are always running and doing stuff, but the idea that kind of like coming back to our silence helps us see the truth is something that I've really been embracing and thinking about, and how being that there are so many things in my life right now that I feel like I don't have the answers to, it's like enlightening to see how slowing down and just like being still will allow those answers to arise naturally, and even just help me tap into patience. I think right now it's like we're all trying to make plans for the future, but we also can't because the world is slowing us down. I think that's just like the world of the pandemic that's really hard to adjust to, and just having time to sit in it and be in it, and especially be in nature, I think is truly valuable. And I have to thank my dad for really, like, telling me to, like, read Rav Nachman. I was, like, crying to him about, you know, stuff going on. And he was just like, Rebecca, you really need to read Rav Nachman. He knows I love it. So it's just really, like, thoughtful of him to bring that up, even though I was, like, so upset about other things. I was like, this is so irrelevant. Like, why are you even talking about Rav Nachman? Like, yes, Rav Nachman, he's great. I love him. He's like, no, really, like, I think it's what you need right now. And he would be flattered if he knew that that is inspiring this podcast episode. And I've just been looking at quotes. This is like a very white basic moment that I'm expressing, but I am going to be changing my profile picture. And I have like I was just like looking at different quotes because I'm feeling very like high school vibes, like let me make a quote, like a cute quote for my profile picture. And I just wanted to end off this portion of the podcast with this quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson that I thought was so beautiful. It goes, adopt the pace of nature. Okay, let's try that again. Adopt the pace of nature. Her secret is patience. And I think that when we look at the water and the trees moving in the wind and seeing how they just like have no care in the world, like I feel like I'm always looking at nature and relating it to the human psyche and how we are always on the go, but there's just something very calm about the water's chaos and even about the swifting, what's the word, like swaying in the wind, the trees, and just looking at it really helps you just like be in this world. And that's enough of that, and let's just move on, right? And so the finale is our amazing story with Devorah and Yael. So without further ado, the story begins like this. In the book of Shoftim, Yavin, the king of Canaan, would constantly oppress the Jewish people, and since they did evil in Hashem's eyes, he did not save them from him until they began repenting and mending their ways. So basically, the Jewish people were bad, and this king of Canaan was really not into them, and they were just not good days. In those days, the general of Yavin's army was a man named Sisera. Okay. General of this army is this guy named Sisera. At the time, Devorah the prophetess led the Jewish nation, since there was no man who was as wise and understanding as her in that generation. Now, I just have to pause the story for a second and just say how crazy it is that I'm like, I have this Gemara Chavruta, and like, if any of you guys have ever learned the Gemara or just in general are learning of any of the Jewish texts, you would know that the rabbis, that this, you know, this role of women in the Torah is kind of like on the back burner, kind of subservient. So I think it's like really cool when there's randomly like a woman heroine in the Tanakh that is just like, yeah, like, and especially here, like, just, you know, there was no other man that could do the job. Like, oh, what about all the times that you said women were incapable or were not named for their names or were referred to as the wife of someone else? And suddenly you're like, yeah, like, whatever. This woman was just like amazing and like she could do it all. And I don't know, just crazy. So back to the story. She then called upon Barak, son of Avinoam, and commanded him to wage war against Sisera and his army, along with 10,000 men from the tribe of Naphtali. Just to give more context, 10,000 is not enough people to win this war. She's saying something crazy, like, go out to war with your few people and, like, win it. And promised him that Hashem would make Sisera fall before them. So she's like, God has your back, all is good. Nevertheless, Barak was afraid to go out to battle, and he requested that Devorah come out to the battlefield along with him. And so, you know, he's scared, and he's like, come on, like, I can't really do this. I'm going to do it, like, I'll listen, but, like, come with me. Unclear what her role was. It's not really clear in the story. Like, did she go out to battle? Whatever. Indeed, Devorah agreed, but she told him that since he had not trusted her guarantee and gone out to war alone, Hashem would take the glory away from him and make Sisera fall at the hands of a woman. So basically, because Barak was scared, she's like, okay, great, but like now that you've been scared, the credit for this war and the win isn't going to go to you anymore. It's going to go to the hands of a woman. What's interesting about this phrasing is that she doesn't say, like, it's going to go to the hands of me. Like, she just has hands of a woman, so it's kind of vague. But you'll see how this fits into the story later on. So, indeed, Hashem performed great wonders for the Jewish nation by making the stars descend from their paths, thus causing the weather to become unbearably hot. Sounds familiar to this New York City summer weather, huh? Sisera's soldiers then went to cool themselves off in a river where Hashem caused a whirlpool, and they all drowned. The Jewish nation won an unprecedented victory against Sisera's forces. Sisera himself was able to escape and fled by foot to the home of Chever the Kenite, a friend of Yavin, king of Canaan. So he, like, was able to flee from this situation and seemingly was, like, kind of the last person in the war, and otherwise... that was basically it. So when Chever's wife, Yael, saw Sisera, she invited him into the tent. And as he was quite thirsty, he asked her for a drink of water. However, she wisely opened a flask of milk and gave him some to drink in order to make him fall asleep. And basically, like, it's Yael's kind of on the Jewish people's side. So when he fell asleep, the verse states... Yael, wife of Chever, took the stake of the tent, and she took the hammer in her hands. She came upon him secretly and rammed the stake, excuse the violence, into his temple until it was wedged in the earth and he had fallen asleep, was drowsy, and died. So basically she killed him with the stake of a tent. Like, wow. I like, have no words. I just, like, it's so crazy that this woman who, like, just had this random stranger kind of, like, hop into her tent and ask for help. She was, like... realized what her purpose was in this situation and kind of like what she had to do, and she did it. And then there's this interesting part in this commentary that I'm reading from where it's like a whole discussion about like why she killed it with the stake of a tent and not with a sword, and there's something to do with like her following like a specific halacha where like women aren't supposed to use the vestments of a man. And honestly, this part's pretty unclear to me, but the point is just to say that Yael is like further righteous because she used this like other object. Even in the time of stress when she had newer purpose, she still followed the halacha. So lovely. More points for Yael. And one important point to bring out is that if you remember, Devorah said that the war's credit and the glory would be at the hands of a woman. And who she meant, she didn't specify who it was because it was at the hands of Yael that this war was defeated and that she killed Sisera. And I don't know if Devorah knew Yael, but I think what's really interesting about this story is the unheard, untold, unseen, whatever it is, camaraderie between the two women. Like, I wonder if they knew each other, and it seems like they didn't, and Devorah was just kind of like doing her prophetess diligence, but it just seems like there is this untold friendship between them. And Yael's struggle kind of makes me think of like those moments when you know you have to do something and you have to do it quickly, but you don't have the courage to do it, but like you know you have to do it, you just have to jump into it. And I mean, I was really, it's just on the, you know, when like you have something on the forefront of your mind, so you just make the connection. But I just went on a trip this past weekend, and we were gonna go kayaking, and we sort of expected that we would kind of like arrive and just be able to go right where we were and kind of like kayak out, kayak in, and do whatever and have freedom. But we soon found out upon arrival that kayak rentals sometimes mean like they drive you out far and then you like kayak back to the place where you rented it. And the easiest, the shortest route would have taken 3 to 4 hours, and they were like, oh, you guys, like, what's wrong with 3 to 4, like, is that good for you? And we were like, oh my god, we did not sign up for this. And they ended up letting us go somewhere a little closer that would only take like an hour. And even for then, I was like panicking, like, this is so long on the water, I'm stuck, oh my gosh. And I just felt like I have to do this. Like, this is something that it's going to be okay. It's going to be really fun. I just have to like accept that this is my fate and know that people do this and it's really fun. And I just feel like so proud of myself, even for like that small victory of having that moment of, this is crazy, I don't want to do this. Oh my gosh. And then just being like, I have to do this. This is my purpose, etc. And I don't know why. Like, I kind of see the connection between Yael because, but I also think that clearly her stake was much more significant than my hour of kayaking that I was scared to do. So let's all learn from the badassness of Yael, and who knows what untold camaraderies we have with the women of the world around us. And I know you think I'm done with the story, but I found this insane, insane, beyond insane interpretation. Like, all the stories we hear, she feeds him milk, she kills him, etc. But in this account, however, I got this from jwa.org. This article by Tamar Kadari. Just have to give her creds because this is so crazy. However, Sisera lying with Yael, which is learnt from Judges 5:27, the 1917 JPS translation, at her feet he sunk, he fell, he lay. At her feet he sunk, he fell. Where he sunk, there he fell down, dead. The words sunk, fell, and lay recur a total of 7 times in this verse, from which these rabbis derive that Sisera engaged in intercourse with Yael 7 times during their encounter. This approach also clears Yael of any guilt and establishes that sin for heaven's sake is greater than fulfilling a commandment that is not done for heaven's sake. This sinful intercourse in which Yael engaged with Sisera was for heaven's sake, in order to exhaust him so that she could kill him. Accordingly, Yael's actions is greater than the performance of the commandment performed for heaven's sake. Anyways, heaven's sake, God's sake, whatever. So let's backtrack. Yael had sex with Sisera, and that's how she got him to be so tired, because she had sex with him so many times in a row that he was just exhausted. That was not the story I learned growing up, and that just needs to have like a moment of like, whoa, silence. Okay. This is learned from the Song of Devorah. Most blessed of women be Yael, wife of Hever, the Kenite. Most blessed of women in tents. The Midrashic exposition understands that women in tents to be Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah, each of whom is mentioned in reference to a tent. Yael's deed is more blessed than those of the 4 matriarchs. One possible explanation of this midrash that places Yael on a higher level than the matriarchs of the Jewish nation is that the latter engaged in sexual relations for pleasure and to produce offspring, while Yael acted with the sole aim of killing Sisera. Can you imagine? Like, just the amount of manipulation that goes into, okay, I'm going to have sex with him so much that he just, like, is so powerless that then I'll kill him. It's just crazy. Another explanation of the Talmudic dictum by Rashi is that the matriarchs told their husbands to come to their handmaidens, intending this not for a sacred purpose, but because they were jealous of one another, and consequently, Yael's deed was greater than theirs. So this brings up another point that even more so, Yael's deed was greater than that of the other matriarchs, because supposedly they were telling their husbands to have sex because they were jealous of each other, which, let's disregard that, because, like, I've never heard of that before anywhere else. And also, I have, like, a soft spot for the Imahot, so, like, don't hate on them, you know? Like, what is that even saying? Anyways, that is not the note that I'm going to end off on this podcast. So, Yael is awesome, and so is Devorah, and I hope you enjoyed this story. And it's really just been so great getting back to the podcast. I'm really excited about the future of the content creation for this month and all the different things that I have in store. Actually, my next episode is going to be a longer episode interviewing a bunch of friends of mine, some from Instagram, some from my hometown, about their choice in Aliyah and kind of like what their individual stories are like. So I'm really excited for those interviews and for that episode to come out and to publicize it and to hopefully just like give more to people who are interested in possibly moving to Israel and get more insight for myself as well. So I'm super pumped for that. I'm going to end off this episode with a quote that I saw that I just felt so like inspired by, and I've been like looking at a lot of quotes, as you know, for my damn prof pick. And this one's just really about not letting life just be like so monotonous. Like, I think when we can romanticize the parts of our life that are struggles, it makes the parts of our lives that are struggles a little easier to just deal with, because they become something beautiful. Like, for me, my Judaism is so much about the questions and the discourse and conversing with people who are different than me about their beliefs and understanding the differences, and even like coming to terms with the things that the sages say that, you know, you don't agree with. And for me, like, that's what religion is about. And by romanticizing that quest, it makes everything in this religion like so exciting and just like, I'm trying to think of like a word for like tasty that isn't tasty, because that's weird, but you know what I'm saying. So a quote goes like this: life should not be a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a pretty and well-preserved body, but rather to skid in broadside in a cloud of smoke, thoroughly used up, totally worn out, and loudly proclaiming, "Wow, what a ride." Hunter S. Thompson. I just think it's such a beautiful quote and just a good sentiment to have right now during this crazy, crazy time. So I hope you all have a great rest of your week and talk to you soon. Bye.